Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chicago's Legal Latte, a series of podcasts brought to you by Lavelle Law Limited. Throughout this series, the attorneys from Lavelle Law will share their answers to questions about a variety of topics for individuals and small businesses. To participate in today's discussion, you can email us at podcast@lavellelaw.com.
It wasn't my fault. I think most of us would acknowledge using that phrase sometime throughout our lives, probably more so during our youth, but nonetheless, it's been used from time to time. Now, in matters of law, it's not really up to us to decide whose fault it is. In cases involving personal injury, determining fault and responsibility for one's actions, or even lack of actions in some cases, can be critical to the outcome. Hi, everybody. This is Jim Mitchell, and today we'll take a look at responsibility, not so much for one's actions, but for the action or behavior of one's pet, as we discuss cases involving dog bites or perhaps other animal attacks. I'll be joined by Lavelle Law attorney Joe Vito. Joe has some great experience in personal injury realm, and he's going to share some information with us today. Joe, good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Jim. It's great to be here with you.
As I mentioned, you know, this is your one of your areas of great experience. You've done a tremendous job building a very, very reputable personal injury practice group at Lavelle Law in recent years. And when we start to talk about issues involving pets, am I correct to assume that the vast majority of these cases are going to involve dog bites as opposed to any other pet?
Yeah, both because dogs are so common and because if you're bitten by some other type of pet, it normally isn't that serious. I mean, you can get some bad cat cases, but I'd say the overwhelming majority are dog issues just because of the amount of injury that a dog, especially certain types of breeds like pit bulls, can produce on somebody. It can be pretty devastating at times.
Mm-hmm. And would you say you see more cases like this increase in warmer months when both people and pets spend more time outside?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, people are outside. Dogs are able to be outside. They don't have to be indoors. And, you know, people leave them out a lot, and sometimes they get out of the yards or they're just out on walks and on leashes, and they have a tendency, you know, to get off when they're actually out. So just by the mere fact of, you know, there being warmer weather, more people out with their pets, you see a typical increase in these types of cases during the warmer months.
Now, is there here in Illinois a specific statute or law that covers responsibility for animal owners?
Yes. There's an overarching law called the Animal Control Act, which is not just for pets. It's a pretty large body of law regarding agriculture and all sorts of things. But there's a specific section in that larger statute that provides for liability in these types of situations. That makes it pretty difficult for a dog owner whose dog has bitten somebody to escape liability in these types of cases. Some people consider it strict liability, although that's not exactly true. But it is pretty adverse to the pet owner and pretty favorable to the victim.
Now, it's interesting because so many times when I talk to you or your colleagues, there's a whole matter of, you know, interpreting the law, how the courts might interpret something, and different ways it could be challenged. It sounds like the guidelines in this are fairly specific. Is that the case?
Yes, that is the case. It's a fairly specific set of facts that the injured party has to prove, which aren't that onerous in these types of cases, as I was saying. One of the first that they have to prove is that they were lawfully, the injured party was lawfully in the place where the incident occurred. So if you're walking down the street on the sidewalk and somebody's dog bites you, obviously you had a right to be there. When the cases get trickier is if you're trespassing, obviously. You're in someone's house without their permission, or, you know, where it gets a little bit more tricky is, you know, did you step into somebody's front yard while you're out on a walk? But still, if you can establish that you had a lawful right to be where you were, you have the first prong of that formula satisfied. The second prong, which is also not too burdensome to meet is that you have to prove that you didn't provoke the animal. And that simply is a severe type of provoking. If you're petting a dog or, you know, looking at a dog or something like that, it's not going to be considered provocation. If you actually go and, you know, yank on the dog's tail or kick the dog or do something like that, it could be considered that you provoked the dog, and then you won't have the affordability of that statute to cover you in your injury case.
And that's interesting, because I think when you use the term provoke, I mean, I think we could probably all have images, as you said, of you know, grabbing the leash or doing something else, you know, some physical contact with the animal. But let me try this example. Like many people, I like to get out and run a few mornings a week or take a bike ride. Now, personally, when I'm out and I see someone walking a dog, particularly women or women with children, who I think that dog might be prone to protect, I tend to veer away, especially if I'm coming up kind of like from behind. If it's like startling someone or just, you know, being out, being active, is that something I'd say, hey, well, you kind of scared my dog because you kind of came up behind us, or do you really need to, you know, make physical contact and cause that dog to be upset in some way with you?
Yeah, like most areas of law, there's a gray area, but this one's a little bit more black and white than normal. Something like that where you're just jogging along and come up from behind a dog that is being docile or is just walking, and all of a sudden that causes the dog to take an adverse reaction and attack you, it's not going to be considered provocation normally, unless you did something, you know, crazy and ran up behind a person and shouted, you know,
yeah,
something, you know, like you were going to attack them, or, you know, actually were trying to physically, you know, attack the people. In that situation, obviously, it's a different story. But if you're just dragging along and you happen to come close to somebody else that's on a bike path, or you're riding your bike and you come close to a dog because you have to pass them up, that's not going to be considered provocation, and you'll still be afforded, you know, protections under the Animal Control Act.
Okay, now you mentioned the two prongs and the what a plaintiff would have to do to sort of justify those. Anything else that has to be proven from the plaintiff's side in these cases?
Well, like any other type of case, you have to prove your damages, that you were in fact injured, and that's, you know, a whole separate area of this type of law, because there's special considerations when you have dog bite cases that normally focus around the physical disfigurement. If there's some nasty scar or something like that, where you'll have to prove the overall value that you've been injured with.
And that's a great point. Something I got a couple of questions for you on that, and let me just reintroduce that we're talking about dog bites or other animal attacks with Lavelle Law personal injury attorney Joe Vito on the podcast today. And I came across the topic in an article Joe recently wrote and posted at lavellelaw.com. If you have been to the site before, I'd suggest a revisit, as it recently underwent some sweeping revisions, and it looks terrific right now. In addition to articles like the one I mentioned, it's much easier to find those and other content, all of it being updated regularly by Joe and the other attorneys. So lavellelaw.com is certainly a great resource. So when you talk about, you know, determining the damages or what would be awarded to the plaintiff, first of all, are these trials handled by just a judge making a decision, or are they jury trials?
They're almost always jury trials, and that depends on the defendant in the case. When someone brings a dog bite case, they're suing the dog owner, who will be normally covered under their homeowner's policy. So if you have, you know, a major company like State Farm or Allstate or something like that, those lawyers will come in and defend the homeowner on behalf of the insurance company, and they will almost always choose to defend the case before a jury, and they have the right to do that in Illinois, and it most likely would be a six-person jury. However, it could go before a judge, but it's highly unlikely because they'll almost always choose to take it to a jury.
And what do you normally expect to encounter then if you're dealing with the insurance companies that are trying to protect their client? What sort of defense are they going to put up?
Well, normally, I mean, the defense in these types of cases, because as I was saying, it's strict liability, the defense is twofold. A lot of times there just aren't a high amount of medical bills and dog bite attacks because it involves hospital, an emergency room, and then stitching. Unless there has to be some sort of plastic surgery down the road, there's not going to be a big medical bill number like you would have in say, a car accident where, you know, someone broke a bone and had to have surgery and then had to have, you know, plates and screws put in and all that. You normally don't get that in an animal attack, and normally the scarring is the bulk of the value. So what the insurance companies will say is, well, you know, you only had a $2,000, $3,000 emergency room bill. Your case isn't that valuable, even though you might have some permanent nasty scarring on your face that is way more valuable than, say, a broken arm would be that will heal and mend with time and won't cause you that long-term embarrassment.
Mm-hmm. Do they factor in, would a jury or would a, you know, as you work in representing someone, I mean, you mentioned that scarring or potential disfigurement of some sort. I mean, does that matter if it's a, 15-year-old who has a long life in front of them as opposed to a 70-year-old? I mean, is that even a factor in these cases?
Yes, it is. I mean, the scarring matters to the degree, to a subjective degree, as to who's scarred. So, you know, someone like you or I, Jim, might not be as embarrassed by a scar on our face as, say, our wives would be. And, you know, it's not to be sexist or anything about it. It's just much more valuable to a woman who might find that, you know, more embarrassing and harder to deal with. You know, if you have some big, burly biker guy who's already got scars on his face, it's going to be a harder sell to say, you know, that this has totally made his life different and really embarrassed him. So the value of the scars is certainly subjective in terms of who's being scarred. Their age, like you said, could be a big issue too. A young 15-year-old, that has the rest of their life to endure with the scar can certainly be more valuable than, you know, someone in their 80s who, just might not be so concerned about their physical appearance.
And you mentioned, you know, the value, determining the value of the award being based partially on, you know, what the medical bills were and then the ultimate scarring. We hear the term, you know, pain and suffering. Is that something that gets evaluated here? Is that like additional damages that might be added?
Yeah, the scar itself would be determined as disfigurement, but the pain and suffering is a whole other sect. I mean, if you're mauled by some pit bull, I mean, there's obviously going to be severe pain and suffering on top of the disfigurement that's compensable. Of course, these are all kind of nebulous calculations that there's no strict formulas for them. They all are subjective and they're different for each case. But there's certainly a pain and suffering value component in a dog bite case.
And in discussing personal injury cases in general with you in the past, you've always stressed the importance of getting, you know, both medical care right away, or medical care right away, let's say, and then immediately reaching out to an attorney very shortly afterwards. Is that consistent in these types of cases as well?
Yeah, of course. You want to get medical care right away for the obvious reasons. I mean, if you're injured, you want that injury taken care of. And the non-obvious reason for the quick medical care is insurance companies will often use gaps in care as a basis to claim that you weren't injured or that, you know, you don't deserve the compensation that you're asking for. And in a similar vein, that's why you want to contact an attorney right away, to make sure that you're being represented, that your interests are being represented, and that you're not going one-on-one with the insurance company that handles these claims all the time, every day, and knows all the tricks to try to keep money out of your pocket. You want to make sure you're represented by someone who understands what they need to do to make sure you get the fullest compensation possible.
And maybe 30 seconds left here, but you talked about medical care, you talked about the attorney. Does a case like this require, or should you at least consider contacting the police after an incident like this occurs?
Yeah, you always want to make a report of a situation like this just to memorialize it right away, and memorialize it by a third independent party that's not you, your attorney, or the insurance company. And this way, the police will come out and take statements, and you'll have that all recorded, and it'll serve as a basis for the insurance company to open the claim and to take you seriously, that you're ready to move forward and make sure that you're compensated in the case.
Well, thanks very much, as always, to Attorney Joe Beter. Joe, thanks for being here with us today. And if you'd like to follow up, learn more about this, you can contact Joe directly at 847-705-7555. And we encourage you to stop by lavellelaw.com. Thanks so much for listening.